Hello, and welcome to this episode of Not a Lady, a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman podcast. My name is Kelly.
And I'm Sarah.
And this is episode 13 of season 1, titled Rite of Passage. I have to say, we just started integrative alternative complementary medicine module in PA school, and we were talking about foxgloves and digitalis today, and we were talking about tinctures, which we've talked about opium tincture on here and stuff, and I was like, actually, I feel like this module is going to help me the most with the podcast more than anything else we've done so far.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, actually, I feel like the podcast has helped me with this unit.
No, that too. No, for sure. The stuff that I'm like, I knew that, but I had to look it up for the podcast. Oh, the podcast has helped me in PA school plenty of times. Plenty of times.
Has it also caused you to fail yet in PA school? Like you thought something because of Dr. Quinn and then you got an answer wrong?
No, in fact, this is really funny, but we just had our rheumatology module, and sometimes I have to come up with little ways to remember drug names for pharmacology, and there's this drug, it's a RANK ligand inhibitor, and the name of it is denosumab, and the way that I remembered is I remembered RANK, remember Stankin Rankin, we talked about him, yeah. And I remembered Tate. that he was from Denver, so I knew that the RANK ligand inhibitor was denosumab. That's how I remembered it. And it was questioned on my test today. My classmates make fun of me for all the weird ways that I remember things, but you gotta do it somehow.
That's funny. Should we talk about lessons from Happy Birthday?
Yes, I'm very excited to hear your guys' thoughts.
I think a common theme for lessons for this episode can be summarized by an email lesson from Julie. Julie said, a lesson Dr. Mike learned, Sully cleans up good. I believe you have some other versions of that.
Including TV_junk13 on Instagram, who also says, never underestimate the power of a good shave and a nice suit. Sully looked so fine in all caps. And that was the real gift. Our friend Petulis said similar, you know, saying that Joe Lando looks good in literally everything. Buckskin pants, a suit, a scarf. And it's true. Petulis also adds that to her, the main lesson is that you can't plan or force anything in life. Things will happen when they are meant to be.
In an email from Grateful Fan, they wrote that they learned a couple things. First off, they learned that the Reverend doesn't actually know what he wants, considering that he just laid on all his wishes for marriage and kids on his first buggy ride with Dr. Mike. They said that if that was truly what he cared about, he would have jumped at the opportunity when the kids first brought up the prospect of courting Dr. Mike. Another thing that they learned is that Sully is very inventive at keeping a suit, razor, hair gel, and an iron on his lean-to outside in the woods. Which I don't know that we have totally established where Sully even lives, but now that I think about it, that suit was very well pressed, considering, yeah, where has he been keeping it? And in an email from Kiara reiterated some of the lessons that we talked about and the themes in the show, especially talking about how you're going to fall down and make a lot of mistakes. And when you're ready to get back up, these characters have support and love to make it possible. Kiara said how the idea of having support and backup really applies to all the characters of the show, especially with issues that they have that don't go away after one episode. Sometimes they will go through struggles that feel singular, but will always have people to help them get by. And Kiara said that maybe that's one of the best things about this show, is that the characters move on and grow by relying on the communities and the found families that they are able to build in their lives. And I think the idea of found families really can apply to our lives as well, and are very applicable for this episode, because without support systems, it would be really hard to overcome any struggles. Guess what? Mom wrote one.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. So Mom wrote in her first lesson, and her lesson was, in this episode,
Sully learns how the tragedy of losing his wife and child have manifested in a fear of the future. That fear keeps him from taking risks in his other relationships.
Mom wrote that?
I might have paraphrased.
I'm like, that sounds so, like, eloquent and thought through. Not that Mom isn't that way, I just...
She told me what she wanted me to talk about, and then I wrote it out.
And then the English teacher and you made it sound nice.
We kind of breezed over that conversation, but I think it is good to talk about how Sully never got to be a father to his own child, and how even in his marriage to Abigail, like, now he has maybe this fear of the future of what could go wrong or what could happen if he lets himself ever get kind of that close to others, or, you know, in that, we talked about, like, in that role,
right?
You know, whether that be in a romantic relationship, or we had a conversation about Brian asking him to be his pa. And her point was that he really learns this almost about himself in this episode. And that's part of his journey in this episode.
Which is true. We didn't really touch on that much. So thanks, Mom. Sweet, guys. Don't forget that you can send in lessons for this episode
on any of our social media pages, which include Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, our email, and our website. All right, let's talk about this episode. Season 1, episode 13, titled Rite of Passage, aired on the 10th of April, 1993. It was directed by Chuck Bowman. This is his 6th of his 32 episodes that he will direct. And this is actually his 3rd in a row. So
I'm recognizing that name now because we've said it a number of times.
The writers were Sarah Davidson. The last episode that we would have had her was Bad Water. And of course, Beth Sullivan gets creator credit. And we open up on an awkward scene. Let's talk about this. I have to confess that this scene made me extremely uncomfortable, but probably not for the reasons that people think that it made me uncomfortable.
Was it because of the horse?
No.
What are you about to say? I'm like, I thought you were going to be like, it's very unsafe to be in a stall with a horse.
Is that where... Oh my
now
gosh.
I want to know what you're thinking, though, because I'm confused.
No, so... Okay, what makes me uncomfortable about this scene is I feel like I don't want to have a conversation about consent, but I feel like we should have a conversation about consent.
Oh, gosh. Because...
I don't know, did you not feel uncomfortable when she's like, she kept saying no, like, we shouldn't do this, your mother, and he's like,
we're not married, it's not right,
And he's like, I care about you, and I'm like, manipulation, that's not even like, and I love you, you know, it's like, don't you know I care about you, that's why, besides the whole fact that it's just, it is meant to be uncomfortable when Dr. Mike, you know, finds them. I'm wondering if this is one of those things where you'll remember a couple episodes back, Tracy wrote in that she had written a paper about how a lot of historical and period pieces reflect that some of the history reflected in those pieces is more a bigger reflection of the era they were created in versus like the era they, because I wonder if Matthew kind of insisting to Ingrid where she's really kind of protesting, I wonder if that's more a reflection of like what was romantic in the 90s versus definitely not appropriate for 1860s romance. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't think the scene was supposed to make us think that Matthew was pushing Ingrid to do something she didn't want to do. I really don't think that that was the purpose of the scene, but I had a really hard time because I felt like that's what was happening.
Yeah.
I find Matthew and Dr. Mike kind of very unlikable in this episode.
Well, because one's paying like the I'm a grown-up teenager, And the one's playing like an overbearing mother. So
neither one of them are doing it in a way that makes them sympathetic.
Right.
But anyway, we'll talk more about that as we progress into the episode. But like I said, Dr. Mike finds them and Ingrid starts having a, I guess, an asthma attack. Which, can you have an asthma? At first I thought it was a panic attack. Can you have an asthma attack from just panicking?
Yeah. So asthma, obviously, people are way more familiar with now than they probably were then, but it's a condition, and there are a lot of genetic predispositions that can put you at risk for asthma, or you can just have it based on a certain trigger, you know, certain people with ragweed or things like that. But your airways are narrowing and swelling and producing extra mucus, which can make breathing difficult, obviously. Triggers a lot of people to have coughing, wheezing, shortness of breath, things like that. And so, yeah, for a lot of people, sometimes that quote-unquote trigger can be an increase in adrenaline, an increase in pulse, heart rate, things like that. And so I think she does get pretty, you know, overworked kind of easily in this situation. She's stressed. Dr. Mike is there, flustered, yeah. Which I think the way that it escalates is interesting. I'm not sure how realistic that is, but, you know, she's not actually having an asthma attack. So the acting is, you know, can only do so much. So, yeah, she starts having difficulty breathing, and Dr. Mike has her lift her arms up, which is something that I've seen a lot of, like, you know, if you were to Google, like, natural ways to control my asthma or whatever, a lot of times if they say if you, like, slowly place your arms over your head, it lifts your chest, which can help. But most of asthma is those small bronchioles in your lungs, and lifting your chest won't necessarily do that. But it can help the position just because you're putting your chest out. So that can help people sometimes. But, well, before anything else happens, we have our, I don't know why I wanted to say theme song. It's not the theme song. I guess it is.
It is a theme song. Theme music with no narration. I guess the narration is done. We like know, we know
now. We should probably stop saying that. Nobody cares anymore.
For some reason, I thought that the narration like was always at the beginning. But I guess maybe it was only at the beginning of the show when they were still like introducing people to the concept of the show.
Right. Or maybe part of me wonders if because we have the DVD set that it's consistent on the DVD set versus watching it like on Amazon or the other streaming services. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But we're still outside the barn and Dr. Mike gives Ingrid chloroform to relax her air passages, which we talked about chloroform.
Did we talk about chloroform? Oh, we did in the pilot. You're right. Chloroform is just to make people pass out. That when you kidnap them.
I think I made the assumption that chloroform is probably what they were using, but I don't know if we've ever had it listed before.
Right.
Chloroform, we don't use that today. It's very toxic. Can seriously damage your eyes, liver, skin, kidneys. It's even been proven to cause cancer. So that's not something we do today, but you are correct. In a lot of older TV shows, that seems to be the one sedative, or at least in this case, broncho. I'm thinking of medical words, bronchodilator that we use in this case started being used as an anesthetic. That's the word I was thinking of. In 1842, actually. And the guy, this won't make you happy, but he first started testing it on dogs, actually.
No. Which is,
yeah, unfortunate. But she also states that Matthew should take Ingrid home and put her to bed with a mustard plaster. Again, it's very interesting that I'm in my integrative alternative medicine module right now, because mustard plaster is a poultice, which I learned today, actually. Poultice is some sort of moist material and mixture. You put it in between, like, two pieces of linen, and then you place that directly on your skin or your body, wherever you're going to put it. And mustard plaster is of mustard seed. And it's still, I mean, you could Google it today. It's kind of a home remedy for the flu, cough, or cold. People think it draws kind of, like, the gunk out. So that is kind of weird, because Brian and Matthew are like, Ingrid should just stay here. She can stay here. And there's this weird, like, no, I should go home. Dr. Mike doesn't want her to stay, even with Brian and Matthew's pushing, for kind of obvious reasons.
I think it's out of care for Ingrid. That's not, there's no, like, secret motives there.
Yeah.
But I can understand, A, the situation Dr. Mike just walked in on, and be. We know right. She's got all those siblings too, so.
Yeah. So then Dr. Mike gives her a little packet, which I'm assuming is that mustard seed, so that she can make it into a paste and put it on her chest.
The next scene is Matthew returning, having dropped Ingrid off at home. Dr. Mike tries to have an adult conversation with him, but it goes really badly. She's like, there's things that you should know. And he's like, nothing happened. You don't believe me? And she's like, but we should, I can teach you things or tell you about things. And then he's like, this is private, which this is where she's going to use the whole in my house rule later. I feel like this would be the fitting point to be like, it's not private if it's happening in my barn.
Right.
It's uncomfortable, which I mean, anytime birds and the bees talk, it's uncomfortable. And especially considering, you know, we have a single woman and a coming-of-age young man.
Yeah.
Sully comes.
Yeah, so then Dr. Mike's in the garden.
She doesn't want to try and have the conversation again, so.
No, but here's what gets me is this is how I know she's deeply, like, caught up in this. Because Sully appears, she's in the garden, doesn't even notice him come up and talk to her. Which is saying a lot considering the last time we saw them. He, like, kissed her, so she's, you're like, right. Totally...
They're weird in this episode, especially if you think about the fact that they, like, had their first kiss in the last episode. Their relationship is weird, and maybe that's why they're kind of, again, okay, now what?
Yeah. She's so caught up, so worried about Matthew and Ingrid, you know, and she says, I caught him, and he's like, so? He has such a guy answer. Actually, that's very sexist of me to say. That's not a guy answer. He's just like, they were kissing, and then he's like, yeah, so?
And this is the thing, like, they kind of make Sully out to be like this bro in this episode.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because he's never been like that before. Like, this is more like a Jake or a Hank, you know, like, so what?
Well, it's not as unlikable as they will become later, but I think it is maybe because he's not a parent. Not that he has not been a parent, but to a parent to a teenager like this, so.
Yeah.
And Dr. Mike's very focused on the fact that she doesn't want them to do anything they regret. And then she's like, I'm going to need you to talk to him, basically. She basically pressures him into talking to Matthew, which is kind of the best scene ever.
Yeah.
Because this is kind of how I picture guys having conversations about things.
Okay, if we break down how this conversation goes, it's basically, Sully, can you have a sex talk with Matthew? That's basically what happens. But actually, their conversation is so cryptic. Like, well, he should know things. I'm sure he does, you know? Like, but maybe you could talk to him as a man. Like, it's like, so they like beat totally around the bush. And then, yeah, the next scene.
I love it. I think it's hilarious.
Here's the thing. Sex ed as a concept, I'm not saying sex ed is the best way to learn about sex, but as far as like formal education about sex and all that goes with it didn't actually come until the 1900s. And so prior to that, probably especially in conservative communities, the only education that anyone, really young people and old, were really getting would be like preachers warning against the sin of fornication and all that kind of stuff. Your face.
I'm just really uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable, but I read a book set during World War I called Testament of Youth by Vera Brittain quite a few years back. So this is like in 1914 through 18, that's when World War I was, but she wrote about in that book, and this is in England, so it's a little bit different, but she wrote about how a lot of girls, when they got married, knew that they had wifely responsibilities, but didn't actually know what that meant. Because it was not something that in polite society people, like, ever talked about. And so, you know, these girls went into their marriages, like, totally blind. And I guess maybe that's among women. I feel like among men, probably it was, like you kind of said, it's a little sexist, but that kind of, what would be considered a more crass subject was only really discussed by men. And so I have to wonder where we're talking the 1860s, so before that even, how much, yeah, do people know? Now, then there's the layer of like growing up out west where there are farm animals. And especially with, it's funny that Sully asks Matthew, you know, do you know how a woman gets pregnant? Because Charlotte was a midwife. But then remember earlier, we also had the conversation where Colleen didn't know about getting her period. And I was like, that's so weird because Charlotte was a midwife. So I guess, you know, I just don't know how much they actually talk about. And again, this is meant to be a family-friendly show part. And so it's always really interesting and probably why it feels awkward for us to actually like talk about these scenes, because they really do kind of skirt about the actual, like what we would call like substance of what they're talking about, right? Do you know how a woman gets pregnant? Yep.
Yep. Good. Got any questions? Nope.
No. Cool. Good. I know it's a funny scene, but I don't know that Sully or Dr. Mike really are doing any favors for Matthew or Ingrid.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Sully really wanted to be involved, and that was his, you know, if I'm going to have to be involved, I'll ask questions, but I'm not going to push. Dr. Mike would have pushed even if he would have been like, yes, right, of course I know.
Or Sully just kind of opens the door to be like, yes, Benji?
Have another Benji feature.
Yeah, I guess Sully kind of just, like, he opens the door. If you want to ask me questions, you can. But he's not volunteering any information.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we haven't mentioned, Brian is kind of sneaking around during all this. And we have not established if he has heard or whatever, but we do see him sneaking around. Outside the Bray's Mercantile, we have the family coming into town, and Matthew states that he wants to go get a haircut from Jake, which is kind of shocking to Dr. Mike, and she offers to give him money, but he's like, no, no, I have my own money. And I think we start to see this reoccurring theme that Matthew wants to be treated like an adult. He knows what he's doing, and he doesn't want help. And I really hope our mom is not listening to this podcast, because she'll be like, I have a couple children like that. One in particular.
In Jake's shop, does Lauren work? Because he spends big chunk of last episode and this episode, he's just hanging out in Jake's shop.
Yeah, they're buds.
Reading the paper where he briefly,
casually,
just to throw out some historical stuff in there.
Make it seem, yeah, relevant. I think it's supposed to make it seem convincing.
So he brings up the idea that women's suffrage has begun and ladies are trying to get a vote, and they all have a laugh about it, that that'll never happen. So I do want to give some context, because I think a lot of people know that the 20th century, that I think is the time that's mainly known for the huge women's suffrage movement. And women's suffrage, for those of you who may not know, is women's right to vote. But I did learn something that I didn't really know or understand. And actually, considering that it is February right now, which is also Black History Month, part of the reason that women's suffrage really became a movement, I won't say that there weren't men or women who believed it, that women should have the right to vote prior to this, but when it became a movement was really in the 1820s and 30s. And so the first meeting, it was called the Seneca Falls Convention, happened in 1848. And there were two ladies that kind of initiated this, though there were many other amazing women who were behind the start of the women's suffrage movement. But Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott were two of the first, what we would, you know, called suffragettes. And at this convention, they read a declaration of sentiments. And the leading statement in it was, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, and that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness."
And when I meet Thomas Jefferson, I'm gonna tell him to include women in the sequel.
There you go. There's anybody? Your Hamilton reference. Yeah, that's why I want to be like, hey, just so you know, these women didn't start women's suffrage, but this is where what we see is what's called the women's suffrage movement really first sees the light of day. And it would have become especially big right after the Civil War, because after the Civil War in 1870, and this is where it ties into Black History Month, but the 15th Amendment was when Black men were given the right to vote. And so there were a lot of women who were like, hey, what about us, you know? So it fits that in this time that we know is post-Civil War, it fits that this is something that would be in the headlines of the newspaper.
That's good. I'm glad that it actually does fit with the timeline.
Yeah, it does. But unfortunately, at this time, women's suffrage also has a long way to go before we get right. to the 19th Amendment. Sure.
Yeah.
So it's also a crazy reminder to me in the world of Dr. Quinn. Oh, Dr. Quinn, our strong, independent, hard-headed woman, is considered less of a citizen, you know, and can't vote. And
right.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah. I forgot about that thing. Yeah. But yeah, so Matthew's getting a haircut.
Yep. But not only does he want a haircut, he wants a shave for that baby face of his.
I feel like they're nice about it, though. Well, at first they're like, why?
I know, Lauren's like getting up close and personal. Like,
oh yeah,
of course.
Let's give a man a shave.
Which I like had a moment where Jake actually takes his razor and uses it. It's called a razor strap or razor strop. And I was like, oh my gosh, sepsis, that does not seem clean, which, yeah, true. But I thought those things were to sharpen the razor. They're actually not really to sharpen the razor. They're actually used to, like, realign the razor so it's straight and you get that edge on it. Anyway, oh, not...
How do you know that?
I looked it up. Oh.
And we only notice it because of Happy Birthday. But I like to think perhaps that he has them off screen in some antiseptic or something.
No, yeah. And I think, I mean, that's still something if you go to like some classic barber shops today, they do use, but they have sharpening paste and whatever. Anyway, yeah. So this is kind of step one, not step one.
Of his initiation into manhood, according to the townsmen, which is,
yes,
it's about to go bad.
Yes. Well, that's kind of my point where I'm like, this is the first thing. And then next thing you know, we're at the saloon and Lauren.
Do you think that Lauren acts so different around Jake and Hank than he does, like, yes, with other people?
Actually, I think some listeners have made comments about this to us. Yes, Lauren does. And I think people will agree that Lauren does act differently around that group of guys. Which, I mean, is something that happens to anybody, whether you're a girl or a guy. Sometimes people get around certain people and act a different way. But
he's probably an Enneagram 3. You know, they're the performer. They, right, like, have different circles of friends, and it affects how they act as a person.
Yeah, because he asks Hank to get Matthew a whiskey, and they're like, they're just, like, having this, like...
And then Hank, out of the blue, is like, show, Matthew, ever been with a woman? And I'm like, what?
Gross. One, gross. Two, why is this... Yeah, why is there, like, this unspoken, like you said, initiation? And it's like, if you know who Matthew is, which we've talked a lot about how it's kind of hard to get to know his character, but come on. Do you know who he is? Do you know who his mother is? Do you, like, who, why are you?
Well, it's also like, what are they expecting? Like, if he says no, what are they going to say? Like, oh, Myra, ding-a-ling, you know? Or if he says yes, are they going to be like, oh, spill the details, boy? Because then they start talking about Ingrid, and he's like, don't talk about her like that.
I like that. He says
that. That should be your initiative to, like, leave the situation.
Right.
But right. I guess he wants to feel like a man, and let's be honest, he doesn't have a huge number of, I mean, Sully is his only...
male influences.
Really? Stable. I wouldn't say only male, but like stable male influence, and Sully's kind of outside of this whole world of the town, so he doesn't really know what to do in this situation.
Yeah. Which part of me, and I know if Mom's listening, she'll agree with this... Part of me thinks, yeah, he wants to feel like a grown-up. And then part of me thinks, I don't think he's doing it to, like, make Dr. Mike mad. But I think he doesn't like the fact that she's been so, like, in your face, hovering over everything you do and having to comment on it. That I think he likes having this control over this part of his life that she doesn't like or is not having a say in.
Yeah, or that they're looking at him as a man, as an individual, even if it's not necessarily the way that he would even define being a man, but he's like, well, if this is what it's going to take for them to see me that way, then I should do it. Which is like, hello, peer pressure.
And of course, this is also where we have Myra come and take Matthew to the back of the saloon. And we're left to wonder, what's going on here? And all the guys are like, I hate
to it. To which she's like, you leave him alone. I'm like, Myra, I know that she's like trying to get him away from the situation. I'm like, but aren't you kind of making it worse?
Right, like, yeah.
Which I guess it wouldn't have worked if she had like walked up to him and be like, Matthew, you know that Dr. Mike wouldn't want you to be here. Because then it probably would have made him want to stay because he's 16 and... Yeah. But at the same time, I'm like, aren't you escalating the rumors and the crass talk and the teasing and...
Yeah. But before that scene plays out, we are in the clinic and Ingrid's there for her treatments with Dr. Mike, in which Dr. Mike actually has the leaves of the Datura plant and she's going to steam them and then she's going to have Ingrid inhale those vapors. And it's also known as Datura stramonium, which I don't know if you've heard of like thorn apple or devil's snare. It's also known as that, but very common for this time period. It's pretty potent stuff, actually, and usually grown in warmer climates. It's basically a weed, actually. In Europe, I read this thing that they actually pick it out of like a lot of livestock pastures and stuff because it's a toxic weed. But it can do a lot of things, but it's very easily to overdose with this because it has hallucinogenic effects, but also psychoactive effects. So it can be pretty toxic. In traditional medicine, there is a lot of evidence that people would smoke it in a cigarette or in a pipe that would kind of help, I guess, numb your air passages is kind of what it was saying. But I don't know. There's a lot of different uses that I found research for. But in this case, I think it was one of the first things that they were using for asthmatic patients to kind of help open up those air passages. Whether that actually was happening or not, we'll never know. But we do have Dr. Mike giving some advice that she should use this every day for a couple weeks to help prevent the asthma attacks that she's had. But she explains that asthma, we don't know why it's caused. It could be a nervous disorder, sometimes caused by overexcitement. And there's this like weird pause where she's like looking at Ingrid and Colleen's there and it's like weird. We obviously know a lot more about asthma now, but at the time they were still figuring this out. They didn't really know why things were happening. But back to the saloon.
And with where this episode says, how can we make this scene more awkward? Let's have men banging on the door outside the room where they think Matthew's with prostitute. Like, what?
Mostly Hank's worried about the fact that he hasn't been paid yet.
Matthew's like, no thanks. And
he's like, no offense.
Which I guess is nice, but this is where I think the fact that in the first scene, Matthew told Ingrid, don't you know I care about you? But then in this scene, he like admits to Myra that he loves Ingrid. Which I'm just like, why is this the moment that we as the audience, because to be honest, we haven't seen much of their relationship, right? So Ingrid and Matthew's I'm talking about. And so really, we've only had like 3.5 episodes to like really get invested in them as a couple. And so that's why I think with that opening scene, it feels so uncomfortable because he's like, I care about you. And she's saying no, and he's not really taking the no. And then in this scene, we realize like, oh, Matthew's really serious about this girl. I guess that's my problem. When saying like, oh, I care about you, so I want you to make out with me, doesn't feel like this is a serious relationship, and especially considering the progression of this episode and what it's all about. You know what I mean? Like, it makes it hard for me to be like, wait, since when?
Again, you're more observant than me because I didn't even really think about the fact that he never said I love you and then he was talking to Myra about it.
Well, and then he also says, like, Dr. Mike thinks...
Says I'm too young.
Which I'm like, actually, has she... She hasn't said it, but I was like, she definitely has implied it. She's definitely implied that she thinks he's too young to be in love.
Right. But then I like that this is when Myra's like, no, like, you have a sweetheart, I have a sweetheart. I was just helping you escape, which we appreciate, but I'm not sure how much we appreciate the, you know, the assumption that everybody else has.
Right.
And it's even worse because now Matthew is fumbling out of her window, which I'm sure everybody knows is her window. And of course, what better timing for Dr. Mike, Colleen, and Ingrid to see? And now we've got like a whole scene.
Oh, it's a
everybody
scene, right.
Notices. Everybody knows.
I do think Dr. Mike often overreacts.
Yeah.
But I think in this moment, I would be livid.
Well, again, it's that idea that perception is reality. So what we perceive to be is what we perceive to be true. So she's obviously making the assumption that everyone else is making. And Sully comes, you know, and he's like, leave Matthew be. You're embarrassing him. He's growing up, which I don't know if I like that comment.
No, I don't like anything that Sully says here, especially when like a day ago, Matthew was kind of telling Dr. Mike to butt out of his romantic endeavors. Whatever. And then to have this happen and just be, sure, she jumps to conclusions. She is screaming at him in the middle of the street. I would probably be like, get in the clinic now, and then I would have my freak out. I didn't think about this until now, but maybe Sully feels like Dr. Mike has invited him into this
parenting moment.
Yeah. She's already been like, hey, can you talk about stuff with him? And so maybe he feels like that's why he's got to have a say. But I really don't understand for 1 second why Sully's like, leave him be, you're embarrassing him, after he just crawled out of a prostitute's window. And he's 16.
It's also unfortunate because I feel bad for Myra. Everyone knows Myra. She's such a sweet, loving, kind character. Yeah. Who you're like, she would never, ever, you know,
yeah,
advise Matthew of all people. So I kind of feel bad that the assumption's made of her, but I guess it's easier to make that of her than of him. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Sully feels, okay, you've let me enter into this. I want to be able to have a say. Don't embarrass him. I get that. Don't embarrass him. But I'm also like, dude, like, in what world is this okay? And even Ingrid is mad. Ingrid has stomped off. And so now Sully's like, he's growing up. Okay, he's growing up suddenly means that he's allowed to do that. You know, and meanwhile, Dr. Yeah. Mike's like, he is out of control. First he wanted a haircut, now this. Like, in what world is that okay? And then my favorite, then she has her little, I'll thank you not to order me around. She says it just like that. And then Sully's like, fine. And they have their little storm off moments and, you know, end scene.
Did these two kiss last episode? Yeah. This whole sequence is so dramatic too. Because then Ingrid's like, I saw you with her. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I remind myself, like, they're teenagers. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But
yeah.
It feels, yeah. The whole scene feels very
over dramatic. Dr. Mike's overreacting. But I think also it needs to be said, and we've had this conversation in previous episodes, Dr. Mike is still used to this mom thing. And now we're talking about being a mom to a teenager.
Still new to this mom thing, you mean?
Yeah. I'm not sure what I said, but yes. She's still new to that. And now you're talking about being a mom to a teenager, which I've obviously never been a mom to a teenager, but I've been a teenager and I've seen my mother be a mother to 4 teenagers, and it's not fun and it's very difficult and every child is different. And so I think it's hard for her to figure it out. She's still trying to navigate it.
Well, and then you also get the layer of she was born and raised in Boston in high society. A lot of my reading when I was trying to read about love and marriage history in the 1860s, it's all about Victorian courting. But I'm like, I bet you that the rules in the Midwest saloon town, mining communities, farmers, ranchers, it's not going to look the same as that high society. Seeing through my, 21st century lens and Dr. Mike's, upper class
proper
lens, and then recognizing, where we are. Yeah,
it's a different
world. It leaves a lot of room for misunderstandings. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good way to put it.
If anyone should be really mad in this situation, I feel like Ingrid should be the most mad, but he wins her back over so quickly.
Yeah, well, because she's a typical teenager in love, and it's very easy to work it out and hug, and it's fine for sure.
Yeah.
But the conversation gets a little more complex because we are now having what looks like a post-church kind of picnic.
New day. They're all wearing new outfits.
Yes. And Dr. Mike takes a second and apologizes for jumping to the wrong conclusions, which is great. We just had that conversation. I think that's very mature. But then she jumps into this spiel about how he's growing up. And because he's growing up, she would like to take him to St. Louis to look at colleges. And I think you're right. This goes back to how Dr. Mike was raised. The idea of you're growing up, you want to be an adult, all these things. Well, that the assumption would be college and looking at your future. But of course, that's not what Matthew comes from. Matthew wants to stay in Colorado Springs. He does not want to leave Ingrid. What are your thoughts on Dr. Mike's conversation about, like, you know, this is the first girl you met. You're going to meet other girls. This is not your end all be all.
Okay, I should preface by saying neither one of us are parents, right?
Right.
But I've been a teacher for 7 years and worked with teenagers. So I feel like I have an understanding of being in a adult role with teens. So I don't want to come in being like, I don't have kids, so I really don't know what it's like. I have a lot of good advice on having hard conversations with teenagers. I really do. And maybe that sounds kind of conceited to say, but when that's my job, and working with parents and teenagers.
I think everybody knows that middle school and high school teachers have a very special gift. So yes, we support you.
My first feeling is that this isn't really an appropriate conversation for her to be having in front of the whole family. Also, she's like, I want to take you to look at colleges, which is immediately, I can tell you that's going to turn that boy off to looking at colleges faster than you can say, oh, I didn't mean for you to have a say. I think if Dr. Mike, and I get we probably wouldn't have had some of the conflict that they want to have for this episode, you know, but if she had sat down with him and had a conversation with him about, well, why do you want to get married? Why do you think that getting married to Ingrid right now is the best thing for her, the best thing for you? And getting him to look at the responsibilities, because the way that it ends up going is, yeah, she goes straight into this, like, I want you to meet other girls, which, like, the whole spiel about this is not your end-all be-all would be the conversation I would expect you to have with someone who just got dumped by their first boyfriend, right, girlfriend, and be like, right, I know that this is really hard for you right now. This is the end of the world. Remember that we had this conversation with Colleen, right? In your mind, this is the worst thing that's ever going to happen to you. Right. That's not the case, but I understand that this is really hard for you right now. So yeah, to say that, especially because it's his first love, whether it be true or not, and I'm not saying that it's not true, very few people marry the first person they ever fall in love with, much less like.
I think we spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about, like, oh, she should have done this better. I would have done this or whatever. But the reality is, I kind of like that they're human. And like you said, I know that the show, there has to be some sort of conflict,
oh, yeah,
at the end. There's this big resolution. But it's like, they are human, and I like the fact that she's trying to figure it out. And yeah. I don't know, I've seen this even with our own parents and parents of friends. When your kids start growing up and becoming adults, it's very hard figuring that out. So she's trying to figure it out. She doesn't respond the best. And I'm not saying, I mean, that's part of the podcast, is us talking about, you know, but also for me, because I'm like, come on, Dr. Mike. One, we have not been introduced to the fact of school in the entire show.
Correct.
So far. What's happening with school.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't think he's ever, ever expressed that we've seen, or that I would assume, the interest of going to college. So.
And that's different if, like, if he'd never thought he could go, right? But then that's a conversation that needs to have. That needed to be had before this conversation. And yeah, no, right. Me talking about, oh, Dr. Mike did this wrong, is not me saying, oh, the show should have done this differently. It's just me, like, outside looking in, what I was thinking about watching the scene.
Right.
And I think we've said this before, that there are certain times where Dr. Mike is trying to convince people of things, whether we agree with them or not, where I feel like she goes into the conversation setting herself up for it to end badly.
Yeah.
And this is one
she gets
where I'm thinking
she gets
that, like,
riled up.
There was probably a way that you could have had a very similar conversation that didn't end up with everyone at the table mad at you and him storming off, right? Because Colleen and Brian are like, we like Ingrid, and they don't really get it. Sully is kind of like, was that necessary?
Well, and he doesn't, you know, he's kind of, you know, there's this conversation about, I want to marry Ingrid, I'm only 16, but, you know, then it's like, Sully, how old was Abigail? Well, Abigail was only 18, and times are changing, you know, and I think Matthew's trying to come up with all these reasons of, like, I'm going to ranch, I can support my family this way, and she's still like, I don't want you to rush into it, this is ridiculous, and then she jumps to a huge statement, which is, I forbid you to marry her. And that's when Colleen and Brian look upset, because like you said, they like Ingrid and they like their brother, and they've never seen Dr. Mike be so stern mom figure.
Telling someone not to do something does not guarantee they're not gonna do it. Dr. Mike is the queen of that. Also, something that we should mention historically is parental approval of marriage is probably one of the few things that the weight of that approval would carry over between like high society or just out west. So
in this time period, let alone now,
to have her say that, like, that's huge. And I also want to mention, so they told us that Charlotte got married at 16, and they also told us that Abigail was 18. And you asked me this question, I think, in Happy Birthday. How old do you think people were when they were getting married? And so I looked it up. So according to a 2010 article in the Journal of Southern History titled The Effect of the Civil War on Southern Marriage Patterns, early colonists married at an average age of around 20 if they were women and around 26 if they were men. So based on the average of the era, both of these couples were younger than the average, which we could go into talking about from my observations of my friends. I feel like the age that parents get married can, not always, but can influence the age that their children feel ready to be married. Not necessarily that they do get married, but the age they feel ready to be married. And that's just based on my friend groups, and our parents got married, both of them in their 30s. And so, like, in my head, I'm not 30 yet. So I'm like, I'm not ready for marriage. But I have friends whose parents got married at like 23 or 26 who are like, yeah, if it were time, I would be married. You know, like,
which, you know, also can be weird because our grandma got married at 18. My mom's mom got married at 18. And so, you know, it's kind of like, how much does that carry over? Yeah,
totally. That's what I'm saying. This is not based on any scientific research or anything. This is just me being like, I feel like there is an influence. And so I think it relates to this conversation where Matthew's like, well, my mom was 16. So why wouldn't I be ready?
So I'm not crazy. Right. Yeah.
Back at the homestead, Matthew, he left early and no one did his chores and she's annoyed.
And I love how Brian's like, maybe he's off getting married.
Oh, was she like, if looks could kill.
She's like, right, exactly.
Matthew is at the Cheyenne camp where something we haven't seen before, where he's not only talking now to Sully about his situation, but actually cloud dancing too, which I kind of love that cloud dancing.
Again, another male figure.
Yeah, but again, another male figure who's kind of outside of what we might consider his day-to-day world.
Right.
So it all comes down to he wants to prove he's a man. Because he thinks if I can prove to Dr. Mike that I'm a man, then this is not going to be a problem. And so the Cheyenne have a custom of going on a vision quest to prove yourself as a man. They kind of talk about it's how you learn about yourself, how you learn about how to see yourself. And so I would like to just talk about vision quests in general. Vision Quest, among Native peoples of North and South America, it's kind of this supernatural experience in which an individual seeks to interact with a guardian spirit, usually related to some type of animal, in order to obtain advice or protection. Or sometimes it can relate to looking for a sign or getting to know yourself. It's a ritual. And this is where I think like our title comes in. It is a rite of passage.
Oh, there you go.
Nearly all the young people traditionally engaged in some sort of vision quest was one of the rituals marking an individual's transition from childhood to adulthood. In some tribes, it was something only men did, but that wasn't true for all. Now, it was interesting that you brought up hallucinogens earlier, because they don't talk about this too much in the episode, but a lot of vision quests included fasting, forgoing food and water for a period of up to several days, prayer, and sometimes in order to have that actual vision, certain cultures did work in the taking of hallucinogens to more significantly connect themselves to what would be the spirit world. But of course, like in this episode, some tribes it was more of a mental experience than a drug-assisted. When Christian missionaries started going and ministering to Native American tribes, similar to the Sundance in the 19th and 20th centuries, the government outlawed vision quests. But they were definitely considered an important practice, especially for those looking to age up, in a way.
Which I just think we should mention briefly. There's been a lot of studies about this, but there was a study done by a guy of the last name Criminology, you could say a different way, that said technically you can go 8 to 21 days without food and water. And technically you could go 2 months just without food if you had like adequate
water
source. So I think there's a lot of, that's such a crazy thing, but technically I think they mentioned 4 days without food and water. It would be possible.
Jesus did it for 40, but I know he was God, so...
He's kind of a god. But you're right. And Sully actually has done a vision quest. He says that he's done it a couple times. It helped him become a better man.
At the clinic, Ingrid is back for another treatment, and it looks like kind of... At first, Colleen's just kind of overseeing it, and there's kind of a cute moment. Ingrid actually really gets along well with all the Cooper kids. And yeah. Colleen's like, I don't know what you see in my brother. He's dopey.
Me talking to our brother's girlfriends. I don't know what you see in him. Just kidding. Our brothers are very sweet human beings. But they're also our brothers. And they're not always.
So this is where I'm like, I kind of wish that Dr. Mike had a conversation with Matthew about why he wants to get married, because we get a really lovely scene here where Ingrid actually tells us, the audience, why she likes Matthew and what she likes about him. You know, that he has a good heart and he's kind. And then they make a joke that I think he likes his horse better than me, though. That is like a really honest expression where we're like, to them, this is a serious romance. Because like I've said, we've really only had a very minimal glimpse into this romance. So it's hard for me to get behind Matthew, even if he wasn't acting like such a butt. Haven't said that in a while.
I know, that's your like favorite insult. That's our only insult.
It's my G-rated.
Well, and in case anyone hasn't noticed, we don't swear, so that's our...
That's as good as it gets. But then
Dr. Mike still wants to know where Matthew is,
right?
So she asks Ingrid,
yeah,
do you know where Matthew is? And Ingrid said that he had been there in the morning, but then she kind of shares her insecurities where it's like,
well, she confronts Dr. Mike.
Yeah, he told me that you don't like me, that I'm not good enough for him. And Dr. Mike denies it, which Dr. Mike has not expressed ever having an issue with Ingrid, right? Not liking Ingrid. Did you notice that? It's never been right. That. It's about the fact that they're too young. Yep. How are you going to support your family? Why don't you do this? But because of all this excitement, Ingrid starts having another asthma attack.
But the reason is, though, I thought this was just a beautiful little insight. She's like, in Sweden, I was a teacher. Where we suddenly, we're seeing her as this child, you know, this orphaned girl who's having to care for her family. And all of a sudden you remember like this
she had a whole immigrant life.
Struggle. She's learning a new language. She's in a new country. Suddenly, I just got so much insight into Ingrid's struggle, and suddenly it made so much sense to me how safe she probably feels with Matthew. Just recognizing the weight of the immigrant struggle and like that they were taken advantage of, you know, by people, and they were, you know, had to compete for jobs and they were looked down upon, and
right.
And just recognizing how Ingrid probably already must feel so okay, because I've lived abroad and I know what it's like to move to a country where, like, I consider myself an intelligent, capable person who communicates well and works hard, and suddenly I moved to China where I can't read, I can't write, I can't speak, and you feel deaf because you can't understand, and you're mute because you can't speak for yourself. And so just recognizing the burden and the weight that Ingrid must feel, and that she expresses it, and then of course that does lead into an asthma attack. But I don't know, I just thought that it's such a short glimpse, but it when you really dig into the depth of it, you're like, yeah, this girl, she's given up a lot for this idea of hope and freedom. And well, we know a lot of her hope for her family's survival and for just her future has come from Matthew. And not just Matthew, but in turn, the whole Cooper family.
Yeah, I actually think it's good that you brought that up about everything that Ingrid's been through, because we don't get a huge revelation of her character until this, I feel like, in a lot of ways, to share some of the struggles that she has had, because we're so focused on the fact of what Dr. Mike thinks is, you know, good and okay. So, no, I think that's a great thing to bring up. This is where then we go back to the Cheyenne village, and we have Cloud Dancing actually telling Matthew more about the vision quest and how it's important to learn and hear what nature has to say, and that's part of the listening process of it all.
He mentions two animals specifically that during a vision quest could mean something, and I wanted to look up what those animals represented to Cheyenne culture. So he mentions the crow and the coyote, and crows, unsurprising probably to many, crows are symbolic of wisdom. They are considered a sacred bird. The idea is that crows can talk, which that is not exclusive to native culture. Not unlike ravens, this quality of their... Do birds have vocal cords? I don't know, but they can make some really interesting sounds. We'll put it that way. And so oftentimes in Native American folklore, crows can talk. And so that is why they're symbolic of wisdom. Whereas a coyote, he is the trickster in a lot of Native American origin stories. The coyote is crafty, intelligent, stealthy, has a hearty appetite, and not just for food, if you get what I mean. However, there is also your face. There is in Navajo tradition, the coyote could also be a warning or a sign of a bad event in your future. So I think it's cool that when you know that he brings up those two animals as animals who could quote unquote speak to you on your vision quest. But then before Matthew can even begin his vision quest, he must complete a task. And the task that Cloud Dancing gives him is to get a perfect egg from a red-tailed hawk. And
he tries. He's looking, climbs a tree, steals an egg, gets
clawed,
scratched. But he brings the egg to Cloud Dancing, and there is a crack. A hairline crack, but a crack. And Cloud Dancing says it's not perfect. And of course, Matthew, what does he do? He gets annoyed. He's annoyed. He's like, forget it. This is crazy.
This is dumb. This is not going to prove I'm a man because I have to work for it.
Right. So he goes home, in which Dr. Mike is waiting up for him. Wouldn't know anything about that. moms waiting up for their children. I used to think that was really annoying that our mom did that, but then I realized that she, like, physically couldn't sleep if, like, we weren't home and okay. Now I don't really think she cares.
She doesn't do that anymore.
I was like, yeah, now she doesn't care, but that's because we're all adults now. But there was definitely a time when I was a teenager and it was like, mom would wait up, but I think it mostly was because she worried.
Again, in this scene, emotions are running high for both of them. Neither one of them is listening to the other one. She's accusing, he's responding disrespectfully. Everyone loses in this argument. There is no winner. And it's scarily realistic. That's where I'll leave that.
Well, because it ends with, as long as you live in this house, you have to answer to me. Well, then I won't live here anymore. Yeah.
So then they're in the mercantile, and I know this is a small town, but I want to be like, why is this anyone's business? But it's basically the whole town.
The whole town's business.
Maybe it's their business because between the Matthew crawling out Myra's window and getting his first whiskey, so everyone already knows, but Lauren is saying he agrees with Dr. Mike that Ingrid and Matthew should wait. Horace is saying, you know, you really only have to know someone for a short time, and you can know. Grace is hardcore flirting with Robert E.
And they look at each other.
And then Olive is like, you know what, the age is not a big deal, but actually I have a problem with the fact that she's an immigrant. Which is ironic considering what...
The hurdy-gurdy?
The hurdy-gurdy. Yeah, but again, that was fulfilling a role that Olive needed. This is consistent with Olive's character, right?
Mm.
Or inconsistently consistent.
Mm.
And then they start talking about, well, what's he going to do for a living? Well, I don't think he should become a rancher. I'm a rancher. Are you saying that? It goes back to the first time we met Olive. And what's weird for me is that later Matthew's going to say that he doesn't really want to be a rancher, but then at the picnic he did say he could keep working for Miss Olive, so I don't know. But then Matthew comes in and is all high and mighty. I'll thank you both to stop making plans for my life. To be honest, I feel like this scene could have been dropped from the episode and it wouldn't have really made any big difference in the whole arching of the story.
Mm.
Like, this scene kind of feels like a time filler to me.
Next, we have Sully and Brian going to see Matthew because he's no longer living at home. He's made kind of like a lean-to, and he's there, and he's talking about how he's thinking about going into mining, even though Sully's like, the pay's not really good. I would know a thing or two about that. And he brings up the fact that Matthew gave up this quest. As soon as you give up this quest, you kind of lose your way because Matthew is finding that everything seems to be going wrong. And if you really want to be a man, then you would finish what you started. Which I think is just, who cares about being a man? What about just like being a good, faithful human? Then yeah, you should finish what you started. That's my personal opinion. But
yeah, I think it's easy to be like, don't be a quitter. But it's different to be someone who is faithful in what they
That's the do. Hard thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Reverend.
Couple things about this scene. Dr. Mike goes see the Reverend, and she's like, don't marry them. And I'm like, grr.
You're going to extreme lengths.
Yeah, like the lengths that she's going to prevent this from happening is really gonna just make it worse for everyone.
Right.
And like I said earlier, forbidding your kids from doing something doesn't keep them from doing it. I think positive encouragement, how to be responsible, as opposed to being like, you are terrible. Stop doing what you're doing. No. Okay, but I like that the Reverend is like, I can't guarantee that because in all honesty, I don't remember if he quite says it in the same way, but he's like, I'd rather they be married than be living in sin or whatever. But also he's like, I know that if they do get married without your permission, that's gonna make their lives twice as horrible. You know, like then something the, yeah. along, like this marriage then it won't stand succeed a chance without your blessing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is, you know, we have good days and bad days with Reverend Johnson, but I appreciated him in this day.
Yes. Ingrid is suddenly packing And Matthew goes to the immigrant camp and he wants to know why.
Did you think that she was packing to run away with him at first?
No.
Well, that's what I thought at first. I was like,
are they she's gonna go live in the lean-to with him? Yeah, right. No, she has taken a nanny job in Denver. And we could probably talk a lot about this scene, but I think the main thing to say is that Matthew doesn't want her to leave, but she says, I don't care about you, which is not true. But again, I think it's a defense mechanism to get out of this situation so that he's not ruining this relationship he has with his family. She's not ruining whatever is happening in her future. It's pretty harsh, and she does it with a pretty straight face. But Matthew's concerned. He's very concerned. And so he runs back to the homestead and is super mad at Dr. Mike.
Wait, before we talk about that, I actually forgot about this scene. But it does seem like it should be a super big scene. But it's actually not that big and it gets resolved very quickly. We don't really know how Ingrid gets to this point. So I think my one edit, if I could edit this episode, would be to take out that mercantile scene and put some sort of scene in here where we get more of the progression of Ingrid's
decision.
Because the last time we saw her was her being like, Matthew says you don't like me, I'm not good enough for him, but I've struggled so hard to get where I am, and I really am more than what this language is limiting me to be. We don't really see how she gets from that to like, I don't care about you.
Right.
And yeah, just like leaving her family behind, like it would, I think it would have been nice to understand more what her motivation is here, other than what I think the writers really were trying to do, which was escalate the conflict so that we have this next horrible scene.
Fight.
Where Matthew is awful.
He's mad.
And especially coming out of the last episode where we made such a big deal about Dr. Mike is no less a person just because she's single. It bothers me, and it's probably because I am a single person. But I'm a single person in the 21st century where it should be okay to be single. But even within certain communities, there's like this view that people who are single for life or for big chunks of their lives, or especially when they're young, are viewed as lesser. Like, you are not living your life to the fullest because you are not married. And that's so not correct. And yeah, his ugly words end with, I don't want to end up like you, alone, a spinster, not having love.
You're not my ma. That one he looks like he regrets, though. Right when he says, you're not my ma, he looks like he regrets that.
She never claimed to be, right? Yeah, like, I don't know. It's just,
but I think I guess that was probably the most hurtful to her. No, he's mad and he's lashing out, as we often do when we're upset, because Ingrid's about to leave and he fully thinks it's Dr. Mike's fault.
Yeah, I mean, this scene is meant to be horrible, right? And what's gonna bother me the most, I'll say it now, is he's not actually gonna ever apologize in this episode for saying what he says to her.
That's been a theme, people not always apologizing for things that they do, but
which I guess that's probably realistic. People don't apologize and you still have to forgive them, but I'm not good at that because I'm a feelings driven person. But the scene ends with he says, you're not my ma, and she says, well, you're not, except she says it meaner, but she says, you're not a man.
You're not a man.
Which I guess is the most hurtful thing she can think to say to him, but it's
sometimes in the moment you can only think of so many things. I just flash back to you and me having a fight one time.
I know what you're gonna say.
No, but I have to remember exactly what you said. I'm pretty sure you said, you're just grow a face. That was your comeback. Do you remember that? I don't remember. That was a while ago.
I don't remember why we were fighting, but I remember.
Oh, me neither. I never really remember why we fight.
Because we don't really curse at each other, so oh, yeah, no. Like, the way that we have to think of mean things to say.
Grow a face.
You know what I do remember, though? I do remember when I learned, shout out to all the kids out there who grew up in households where you weren't supposed to say shut up. I remember when I learned open down. which was the opposite of shut up. And I was like, I'm going to use this when I'm mad at my siblings. Open down. But to be honest, open down does not have the same venomous anger.
No.
Like, you can't say that angry in the way that you can say shut up angrily.
It's like trying to say grow a face angry. I just remember laughing when you said that. I was like, really? That's the best comeback you can think of?
I remember there was like a pause. Just,
but I think after that we were over the fight because that was so funny. Anyway, back in the Cheyenne village, Matthew brings a perfect egg for cloud dancing, and now he is ready to embark on this journey of this vision quest. And maybe you know more about this, but they end up kind of having like a ceremony in the sweat lodge.
Yep.
I'm not sure if it's just like a preparation thing or what's the main purpose.
We talked about how like traditionally it was a time for prayer. And so this is a communal, because this rite of passage is very much like a sending off of someone to come back changed. So yeah, they're having a prayer, not just for Matthew, but he says, pray for your enemies, pray that your heart will be open to your enemies, which is, when I first heard that, I was like, is Dr. Mike his enemy? Or I think it's just more this idea of like, you can't go into this holding anything back and harboring any ill will. If you're going to get to know yourself, you need to see all the messiness in there.
Right.
He even talks about like love, and cloud dancing says something along the lines of love is like a delicate plant, which I'm like, I don't know that I understand that metaphor, but okay. And Brian sneaks into the camp, and this is probably the only time I was like, good job, Sully, this episode anyway. Sully actually thinks to let Dr. Mike know to keep her from worrying about
somebody.
Both her boys.
Actually, very sweet. That actually says a lot about his understanding of their relationship, because he knows she'll be worried, yeah.
So then at the homestead, the messenger has arrived, the native messenger, and Dr. Mike, remember when Doc Eli was like, do you have a doctor who says things like they know everything and it's they're never wrong? That's basically what I felt about this scene, because the messenger, I guess we don't actually witness it, but he explained what Matthew's doing, and Dr. Mike's like, that's physiologically impossible. And I'm like, girl, don't you trust cloud dancing and Sully?
It's the literal phrase, don't shoot the messenger. I wish you would have said that, like, I'm just the messenger, don't be mad at me. But she, again, she's kind of a control freak, so she's insistent that she'll find him herself if nobody's gonna say where he is. So sure enough, we have cloud dancing, Sully, Brian, and a bunch of the other Cheyenne kind of leading Matthew out into the wilderness. And they've got like this whole setup with a buffalo hide, and there's soil and rocks kind of set up. And cloud dancing says that as long as he's in that circle, nothing can hurt him. So just to preface, now we're gonna have a lot of switching back. I kind of had a flashback to what was
bad
the
water?
Bad water, yeah, exactly. Which
is written by the same writer.
Oh, good point, because we're going to have a lot of switching back where we see Matthew in the circle doing his thing, and then we'll switch back to the Cheyenne village or the homestead, because Matthew is in his circle, he's listening, he's looking, he's taking in nature and the sounds around him.
Sully and cloud dancing recognize that there might be a storm coming. Matthew's getting rained on.
Cold and wet, yep.
This I understand Dr. Mike being worried about, because getting a chill back then, like, that really could be a death sentence. So I kind of understand that sort of worry.
Yeah.
We know Dr. Mike's been running around looking for Matthew, but she had to come back because it was raining so hard. She's blaming herself that he wouldn't be out there if it weren't for her. Colleen mentions briefly that she's worried about Ingrid, which I'm like, that's nice that we are remembering there are two people in this
right.
relationship that are having to struggle with some things here. And Dr. Mike does actually, and this is where I'm talking about, like, she admits, I didn't do a good job of listening to Matthew and listening
right.
to what he wanted and what he was trying to tell me. And she mentions that her father didn't actually approve of her own engagement, though he never said anything out loud about it, but she knew, which is very interesting to
think about. I like that reflection, and I think it makes her think beyond this situation. And I think there's a lot of situations, once you put yourself in it, then you see it differently. And I like that she had that kind of realization. Back to Matthew in the circle. There's actually a lightning strike that kind of happens. Dr. Mike is still riding. She's going back out to find him. And this is kind of where we have Matthew wake up because he hears a stampede coming, in which Brian also kind of somehow knows is happening just because they're brothers, I guess.
He has a dream vision.
And he says, Matthew's in trouble, we gotta go. And Sully's kind of all gung-ho for it, but Cloud Dancing's like, no, don't go, he will be okay. You have to trust that he's gonna be okay.
I like how this next scene is done. And we've talked about how in this show, sometimes the quote-unquote effects are very 90s, but I like how they do this where Matthew's in the vision part of his quest. He's hearing the stampede. He's seeing these horses, but then he's thinking about his family and Ingrid. Yeah, I like that. And the way, I just feel like the editing actually is really good, and almost to the point where to us it almost feels like those horses are about to come right over that hill, but then they're not, but then they're there.
And yeah, you kind of have this moment where it was like, it seems it's super real, but then I'm also like, did he imagine that? Because then it's like over and he didn't get touched and you're like,
yeah,
what?
It was his vision. And that's what Cloud Dancing says. He has seen what he needs to see. And then the native questing group go to follow him. Dr. Mike arrives in the Cheyenne village. She is...
Yeah, I think that's what bothers me in this episode. She's just very, like, demanding where he is, and she's forbidding people to do things, and she's demanding that you don't marry them, and I don't know, I think it's a bit much. Again, she's trying to navigate this, but she demands, you know, to find out where Matthew is, and Brian almost...
There's a part where Cloud Dancing makes this face, and I was like, lol, it's a good face. I think Cloud Dancing thinks chill. Like you think, like, girl.
But it's kind of interesting because Brian kind of, like, looks a certain direction and it kind of gives her a hint, I think, of just the direction that Matthew could be in. And
well, before she goes, though, like, Sully gives her a lecture, which I'm like, I don't know why he's doing it. Your mom didn't approve of you coming to Colorado or becoming a doctor. We all have to make choices in our life. And I'm like, Sully, I get what you're trying to do here. However, she's 34. And it was a career choice.
35.
Well, when she decided to move to Colorado, she was 34.
Okay. And
I don't know how old, you know, she was, I guess, 18 or something when she decided to become a doctor, but her father was 100% supportive of that. So I really don't think that these are, like, equal. And I don't know, is he talking about the wedding, or is he getting married, or is he talking about the vision quest? Because part of me is like, how is this relevant? I guess his point is, at some point, you're going to have to let Matthew make his own choices and trust that he has been raised to make the right ones. And if he makes the wrong ones, then that's up to him to respond to it. It is not your job to fix him or protect him from choosing and living his life as he feels called to do. And I guess... it makes me kind of flash back to the Law of the Land where, you know, when he admits to her that he helped kill the bull and she's like, I'll take care of it. It's a little bit of that snowplow mom, like, I will move things out of the way for you. And that is not healthy for any kid or parent. And telling your kid all the time how they're making bad decisions is not helping them make better decisions. Like, at some point, you have to let your kids, you know, if they have a question, then they're going to come to you. But otherwise, you need to trust that you raise them well. And this is where I guess it's, like, hard for her because she feels more of a responsibility for these kids because Charlotte did ask her to take care
of them. Right. Yeah, no, good point. Absolutely.
So it's almost... probably explains why she's overprotective than maybe if they were her own kids. I mean, they are her kids, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. So she ends up finding him, right?
Well, she heads out, and then Matthew takes his shirt off, and a red-tailed hawk lands beside him on the circle. Then Dr. Mike finds where he is and sees that actually...
he's fine. Yeah.
Just hanging out.
He's okay. And so she leaves and I'm like, good job, mom. Good job. He didn't really need her in that moment. And so we have our end scene here at the homestead where Matthew's at the dinner table with the family, Sully and Ingrid, telling them about his experience, how he, in this moment when he got scared, he saw them. He saw Dr. Mike. He saw his siblings. And then Sully kind of gives a little insight, and he sounds so wise here. It's extremely attractive. He's like, he basically says, like, I think being wise and wisdom is being able to be honest and say, like, I don't know sometimes. I don't know what's next. I don't know what this is going to look like, and that's okay. And I think it's interesting just because there's been so much buildup around, like, what does it mean to be a man? What are the things you need to do to be a grown-up and prove yourself? And I think that's it right there, being able to say, like, actually, I don't know.
That no one adults well. We're all just figuring it out.
No, I like that because I feel that way all the time. And I mean, I live on my own in a different state and I don't know what I'm doing. Like literally 99.9999% of the time. Yes. They basically are like, are you going to get married? And he says,
not yet.
Not quite yet. Which is, I think, a little surprising because you're kind of, you know, I mean, you have to know there's going to be this big, like, resolution, but we don't really know exactly what it's going to look like. And so they're not going to get married quite yet. But Colleen actually got Ingrid a job, which...
Go, Colleen.
Colleen, I think she advocates for Ingrid a number of times here.
She really does.
Matthew states that he's going to work and save, and then they would like to be engaged. We're going to be engaged, he says.
And he wants to build a house before they
get married.
This is the kind of thing that I'm like, if they had just like been able to sit down towards the beginning of this episode and have that conversation, let's make a plan.
Right.
And obviously we like got there, but I'm like, yeah, this is where now he's thought it out. He's processed it. Actually, can I say something? This is like kind of bad, but when he was like, I'm gonna save up some money and build the house, and then Dr. Mike, it's a huge moment, but she like gives him, we assume, her engagement ring, and I'm like, wanna make some money? Just sell the ring.
That is horrible. What kind of person are you? This is good to know. When I get you gifts, what are you actually doing with them? Wow, you're that person.
No, but I'm like, do you know how much that ring is probably worth?
I think
from Boston.
I thought that too, though, where I was like, is that David's engagement ring to her, or is that like an heirloom that she was given?
I would assume it's her own engagement ring. She says, yeah. You need an engagement ring.
So that's a pretty nice thing, I guess, to give up, eh?
Oh, heck yeah, girl.
Why? Why do you have to do that? Why can't you just be normal for 5 seconds?
Yes, it is a very expensive item.
Thank you. And so...
the most significant of all. She gives him this freaking $1,000 ring, and then he's like, oh, I guess I love you, Ma.
No, he puts it... See, that's before that even happened. He puts it on Ingrid's finger, and then I'm like, oh, okay. I guess there's, like, no moment of, like, will you marry me asking thing. It's just kind of like, he says, we want to be engaged. Oh, here's a ring. And then he's, like, puts it on her finger. And then, yes, then he thanks Dr. Mike and calls her mom. And then she cries. Oh my gosh. I don't know. There's a lot. Did you notice how many episodes there always are? Like this conflict and then this big resolution at the end. Like they're all pretty typical in that manner, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's a formula. But it's a formula that a lot of shows do that. Like they have these formulas for here's our conflict, rising conflict, things get worse, turning point. Even things out, you know, then we have our happy ending. And especially with this being a family show, I mean, Marvel has the formula. They keep making the same superhero movie over and over again. And do I keep going and buying tickets? You bet.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I like that at the end of this, it is about love and family. And I guess we can say as a whole, like they've all grown closer as a family. Mm-hmm. Through this, and Matthew gets a chance to mature. I think my biggest complaint is that he didn't apologize for how badly he acted.
Yeah. Well, I think it took him getting out of his own self-absorbed universe to recognize, like, oh, my choices do affect other people in a very significant way. And the fact that, like, I am immature, I don't know what I'm doing, and there are steps that need to be had. I also think there's a big theme of, like, what does it mean to support someone, you know? Supporting someone doesn't always mean you have to agree with everything they're doing, but it also means that you have to be smart and kind and compassionate in the way that you express that. And I think Dr. Mike hopefully has learned a little bit of that, whether we get to see it or not. I think that's a factor as well. So yeah, there's a lot of things that play into here. And it is interesting just because we haven't seen a ton of development with Matthew and Ingrid. We've seen bits and pieces, and unfortunately some of those pieces have been out of order, which has made it all kind of a little confusing. But this episode is focused on that, and it'll be interesting what that looks like to come, for sure. So guess you guys will have to stay tuned in.
Good point, Kelly.
I'm ready. My favorite scene, I mean, obviously, I don't even want to say the last scene's my favorite scene. I think my favorite moment is when Sully says, he just sounds so, like, smart. And he is smart, and not everything he did in this episode is smart, but I like that he says that wisdom is being able to say, I don't know. I think that's, I don't know, I like that, and I think it's something I've clinged to this past year. I think a lot of people have, with just the state of the world, is being able to say, I don't know, and admit that is a huge thing. And that's more being an adult, being a man, being a woman, being a grown-up, I think, more than anything else that's displayed in this episode. Yours?
Well, actually, originally, I was going to say that I liked the vision part of his vision quest.
Right.
That's what I had originally, I actually wrote it down. But as we talked about it, I realized I think I actually really appreciated Ingrid's honesty and, like, emotional moment. Like, when Ingrid was talking, I wasn't just thinking about her. I was actually thinking about it. This is still the struggle to this day of every immigrant who moves to any country.
Yeah.
And as someone who's lived as an expat, just to recognize, yeah, the price that immigrants pay when they're seeking better, quote-unquote, better life, and or just, yeah, looking for an opportunity to do whatever they end up doing, how hard that is, and how much they sacrifice and give up and struggle and persevere. As writing and symbolism and just, like, thinking about our world today and how it's so easy to
judge
people and look down on people, and I'm just like, I need to be more loving and compassionate and empathetic, especially with people whose lives I know nothing about.
Right. Yeah.
So I think actually that is what I'm going to pick as my favorite scene.
Nice. Yeah, they probably could have spent a whole episode on that alone, huh?
For real, yeah, definitely. Okay, ranking. I'm automatically thinking this is not a fave.
Same.
Not because it's
not bad. It's just not my favorite.
No, it's just not. Honestly, it's not a very enjoyable episode to watch.
Right.
Because of all, it's a lot of conflict. And that's the thing, I think I said this at the beginning, but, like, just, yeah, like, a lot of the characters are actually not very likable in this episode, which is very realistic. But, like, even between, obviously, Dr. Mike and Matthew, but even, like, Sully in this episode, I mean, Lauren, Hank, Jake, even though they're in it for a hot minute, are, like, really awful. Olive. The best character in this episode? Cloud Dancing's horse. I'm just kidding. So, the episode,
kind of like Father's Day.
Oh, really? You think it's that low?
I don't know. Honestly, what were you going to say?
Well, the other Matthew-centric episode that we've kind of had has been Law of the Land. I think the writing's okay in this episode. The story's not wonderful. Theme? I mean, when you said what you, about that final scene, I was like, dude, that's a great theme. But actually, that only really showed up at the end there.
Right.
Do our characters grow? I mean, they do, but it's...
They do, not necessarily in the fashion.
A lot of, like, not so nice interaction.
But they do.
There is a lot of conflict. I don't know that it's great conflict. Like, is this a great reason to have conflict?
I mean, yes, I think it is. I think the thing that bothers me the most is it's just like very overdramatic, and then there's like all these things that need to happen. I'll be interested to hear what the listeners have to say about this.
Okay, so the healing, we had some good character moments in the healing, but then we had like issues with like Colleen's storyline. Where do you feel like better than that one? Not as good as that one?
I think maybe between Father's Day and the healing. I like the healing.
Okay.
I
mean, I'm okay actually, yeah, I'm okay with that. So it's the new number 11. Do you agree with this ranking? Share your thoughts. And again, we'd love to see if you've been keeping up with us, your ranking of the episode. And also would love to hear from you guys in regards to lessons. Don't forget that every episode you can write in character or listener lessons to share with us.
Thanks for continuing to listen and write in. Next episode we'll be talking about is called Heroes. I'll tell you right now, it's not one of my favorites, but I'm sure it will strike some good conversation as always. So we always love getting messages and emails from you guys. So thanks to our faithful listeners. Don't forget that you can write us on social media.
At Not a Lady Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook. You also can shoot us an email, notaladypodcast@gmail.com. Or please visit our website for all sorts of goodies, including our ranking, where to listen, as well as our resources and research. If you want to learn more about any of the historical stuff that we talk about, there's a lot of good resources out there. And our website is www.notaladypodcast.weebly.com. Thank you for listening to this episode of Not a Lady. If you like this episode, you can support us by liking or sharing our content on social media.
Till next time!